Welcome into the Final Word podcast with Kyle, Bobby, and me, David. It's the Final Word podcast. It's not because we had a final word, it's because Jesus Christ had the final word, and we're just, you know, witnesses of his final word, everything the Father has said through his Son. So we're going to have a really exciting show today. One thing that I think a lot of people have questions about is, probably for the last few decades, there's been, I think a lot of people have noticed, even here in Germany, I think a lot of people have noticed that there's a lot of priests in our parishes who are not native born. Whether they're Filipino, whether they're from Poland, whether they're from a country in Africa, like, how did they get here? How are they integrating into our culture? Just a lot of questions surrounding this. There was a recent poll coming out of the diocese of Archdiocese in New York, talking about one of the difficulties a lot of people have there is that they don't understand their priest, right? So that's one thing people have. And it's just it's a big question. A lot of people wonder where these priests come from. So we have a wonderful person here to help us answer all those questions. He is an expert on the subjects for Leo Ahanutu. He is a distinguished author and expert in cross-cultural leadership training. He's made significant contributions to the understanding and management of cross-cultural challenges faced by Nigerian priests on missions in the United States. His seminal work, Cross-Cultural Leadership Training, Managing the Cross-Cultural Challenges of the Nigerian Priests on a Mission in the United States, with a pre-departure training, it provides invaluable insight and practical strategies for success. So he is our guest on a subject on a Final Word podcast. Father Leo, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gray.
And so I'm just going to kick this off. All right. Father, I have the question I think I'm most interested in asking is, where do the priests come from? And we could start with, I guess, Nigeria. No, Father, I think I want to start somewhere else. Let's start at a more challenging thing. So United States, it seems like a mission territory, right? It seems like a lot of priests are coming from different countries to serve our diocese. And I want to know, what does that mean? Does it mean that some of the seminaries in the United States have failed? Is that why we're in this position? How do we get in this position? And why is Nigeria producing so many priests and the United States is not? Why does other dioceses like Nigeria have to send priests to the United States?
David, that's a very, very nice question. A great one indeed. The answer, I would say, goes as far back as 1964, 1965, after the Vatican II Council, as you know, some cardinals, archbishops, bishops, priests, and the laity were not happy with the changes. And a good example would be Archbishop Lefebvre, who left the church and was eventually excommunicated. And that was David. Even here in the diocese of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I live, I could remember in 2004, I met a priest, Father Kid King, and he told me that his brother, who was also a priest, left the priesthood after that. And so do many other people. And then gradually, it continued. But then it became really big in the 1965, in the mid-1965. Mm-hmm. And when I mean really big, I mean really big in the sense that going back to what I read from CARA, Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, in 2012, they made a research in 2012, and in that research, they said that in 1965, there were 48.3 million Catholics and 58.6 thousand priests. But then coming down to 2016, things changed. Mm-hmm. Now, this time they had registered Catholics 67.7 million, unregistered about 74.2 million. Number of priests dropped down from 58.6 thousand to 38,000, or if I may be precise, 37.19 thousand. Mm-hmm. And then it continued and continued. So, and then it became a big problem in the United States. But at the same time, I would say that it wasn't just in the United States, but it was happening, it was beginning to happen, especially all over the West. But then the U.S. bishops were kind of proactive, really smart about that. As at that time, there were some countries in Europe, like Ireland, Italy, and those places. So they began to recruit priests from those places because their culture is similar to the U.S. culture.
Okay.
But then, after a while, they also started to have priest shortage. So what did they began now to recruit young men from the Southern Hemisphere to train them in the U.S. seminary. Now, that didn't work for a long time. Then the problem continued. Parishes were being locked together and stuff like that. And that was when they decided then that they're going to, you know, go beyond that and look at other places, Vietnam, Philippines, India, Nigeria, and all those places. And then, and that's what happened. And then they began to recruit priests from those places. And that's how people like me came to the United States. And while these things are happening, you know, it's not just the U.S. bishops, but Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, even Pope Paul VI actually saw that happening and was already encouraging the church to start seeing the church as a sending and receiving church. Okay. We are missionary. That's what the church is. And to look into the command of Jesus in the Gospel of St. Mark, chapter 16, verse 15, I think, where Christ commanded his disciples, okay, to go and preach to all nations. And so with that, you know, now they began to see the church, okay, as you know, from the university. Oh, very good, thank you. So, so they began to recruit, and then people from my place started coming here. If I could remember, I may not quote him exactly, but Pope Benedict, the way he wrote it is, he said, look, there are new places where the church is taking root and vocations are coming from those places, and the West could get priests from those places.
Okay.
I'm just paraphrasing, all right? And then our American bishops then began to get priests from a place like Nigeria. John Paul II actually went to Nigeria, I think that was in 1982, and had a meeting with the Nigerian bishops and told them that, hey, when you are needed priests, the West came to your help. Now, the West needs priests. You need to reach out to them. And the Nigerian bishops opened up a big seminary then, mainly to train missionaries that will go out to the Western countries.
Okay.
He also pleaded to other missionary congregations or missionary order to send out priests, you know, to other places. And they also, there were bishops from the United States and other places looking for, how to get priests over. So because the church was taking root and people were really embracing the faith, especially from the eastern part of Nigeria. In the eastern part of Nigeria, monotheism was a big deal. And that's why when the Irish missionaries came there, it didn't take long. And Catholicism spread like a wildfire. Today, more than 70% of the seminaries in Nigeria are in that eastern part of Nigeria. If even in your diocese, if you look now and ask, you know, the priests in your diocese who are from Nigeria, where they come from, I bet they'll tell you that they come from that east or south, you know, those places.
I had a question, Father. Very good explanation. So the state of the church over in Nigeria, where these priests are grown and bred and trained and formed, do they have a surplus of priests over there to where they can export them to other countries? Or do you guys have somewhat of a, because I know here in America, I don't know, you might know this better than me, David, or you, Kyle, what is the parishioner to priest statistic here? Like, in other words, I've heard for every like 1,000 parishioners, there's only one priest. Very disproportionate because of the shortage. So how's the supply over there, Father? If they're able to send priests here to America, are they able to still serve Nigeria, there where they're from, with justice, if that makes sense?
Well, it does, actually, because I can tell you I've heard that question more than 20 times.
21st time's a charm.
But the question we need to ask here is, are we talking about the Catholics in the United States and the Catholics in Nigeria? Or are we talking about, United States as a nation and Nigeria as a nation? Because if you're talking about Nigeria now as a nation, the Muslims in Nigeria are more than the Catholics. You see that?
Okay. But
we do not have the kind of statistics you have here, which you just used.
Mm-hmm.
But with our eyes, I can tell you that I was in Nigeria. The last time I was in Nigeria was in 2012. As at that time, in a parish like this where I am, definitely you will get 2 to 3 priests. But right here, I'm doing this parish and I'm doing another parish. And so when people say that, the big question becomes, are we talking about the nation or are we talking about the Catholics in that nation, in that country?
I guess I'd be curious on each one, if you care to explain.
Sorry?
I guess I'd be curious about each question, if you wouldn't mind expounding a little bit.
I'll go further. Now, see, one thing here is, here in the United States, okay, you do not have as many Muslims as we have in Nigeria. In Nigeria, we have many Muslims, including the bad, bad Muslims who have decided to ally with the ISIS and the rest of all those bad guys, and priests are being beheaded and all those stuff is happening till today.
A lot of human trafficking and kidnapping going on. Boko Haram and
all those stuff. But at the same time, when you think about the parishes and the number of priests in those parishes, in some dioceses, they have more priests than needed. Now, another thing we have to remember is this. You can only give what you have. In other words, if you have more kids, more young men in your family, you wouldn't mind allowing one or two to go into the seminary. Here in the U.S., we all know, I mean, people have two kids, three kids. And even right now, the dynamic is changing. It's not just kids, but they are preferring girls to boys. Now, I was born in a family of 11. So, me going to the seminary wasn't that a big deal, even though I have my own personal issue in the sense that my parents used to tell me that they would have preferred two of my younger ones to be a priest instead of me because, there is a saying popular in Nigeria. I don't know if it is popular here in the United States, and that is, when United States sneezes, the rest of the world gets the cold. Mm-hmm. In other words, U.S. go first, the rest of the world begin to copy. Mm-hmm. And so what are we having now? I come from a family where we were 11 kids. But guess what? None of my 10 siblings have more than four kids. As a matter of fact, only two of them have four kids. The rest have two, three. I can remember the last time I was home, I visited my brother, and I was playing with one of his kids, and I was asking him, okay, what do you want to be in future? And he said, I want to be you. And guess what happened? His mom rushed from the kitchen, grabs the young boy, and said, Father, I do not want you to talk him into priesthood because he's the only one I got. Yeah. So with that now, we don't know what's going to happen probably in the next 20 years. Am I making sense here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So from the time of 11 kids per family to a time now of the average of four kids in a family. And with that, personally, I may not be right. I think it may also affect vocation in future. I don't know, but that's my speculation, and I may be wrong. But right now, we still, all the guys going into the seminary who are priests already, coming over, people from the families of 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know what I mean? Without discouragement, serious discouragement from people.
Yeah. Did I ask? I think that answers it, Father. That's great. So what you're saying is that this sort of contemporary historic influx of African priests that we see in the United States, it's not necessarily going to continue. This is something because Africa, you know, for better or worse, even not just Africa, other places around the world, mirror what's happening in the United States. I see this with my own friends who've discerned the priesthood, who've had a desire to go into the seminary, and they're Americans. You know, they come from a family of 2.5 kids, like we mentioned. And the mothers, the fathers sometimes the other family members, they're aghast. They say, no, I want grandkids. But if you become a priest, you'll never give me grandkids. You're saying that's sort of making it, that mentality is making its way to Africa.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Of course, it's making its way to Africa. I just gave you an example with my nephew and his and his mom.
I guess what I'm still curious on, Father, is aren't there other countries or other parts of Africa that could use those surplus priests that may not be needed locally? Like, why send them transatlantic to America when there's probably other parts of Africa that could be converted? Like you said, there's lots like of Muslims there.
You're like the Ivory Coast. I mean, I know they're like, that's one area that seems to be struggling with mm-hmm. Catholic priests. I mean, so yeah, what about that, Father?
Now, I can tell you that that is one other thing, you know, people talk about. There are also many Nigerian priests in Africa. Well, okay. I was ordained only in my class. Only three people went to the West. The rest were in Africa, some to South Africa, some to Ethiopia, some to Zimbabwe. Hmm. I mean, yeah, so. And something, the northern part of Africa, where Catholicism is not yet strong. So they do not just come to United States only or to the West only. No. What they do is they distribute all over the world, beginning from Africa itself to other countries in Africa. But a lot of people though think that we just come to the United States, like even a priest, okay, once told me that the reason we come here is because of the good life in the United States. Now I will tell you that I felt offended because he's a young man of about 33 years old. So he probably didn't know that the first time I came to the United States in 1987, his mom probably wasn't married yet. But I graduated from Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and went back to Nigeria. I went back to Africa. I became a priest. And then, and when I became a priest, guess where I went? Papua New Guinea, which Mother Teresa called the greatest mission in the world. I saw it myself. Then I was there for years. Of course, with my vow of obedience, I go to wherever I'm asked to go. Then the next thing is that I'll be going to United States, which actually I never know would happen. But then, you know, if you are sent, you are sent. And you just have to say yes. And then I find myself here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Father, you're busting up a couple myths. I think a lot of Catholics in the United States may have. We so definitely appreciate this conversation and the value that you've added to it. One thing I'd like to go back to something you said earlier. You're talking about a lot of the men who go into seminary in Nigeria, they come from the eastern part. So I want to talk about those men. I want to ask you, what tribes do they usually come from? Here in the Archdiocese of Military Services, most of our priests from Nigeria, they're mainly Igbo. Is that the majority of men from the East? What tribes do they belong to? And also, in adding to that, based upon that, what tribe they come from, what type of culture comes with them? And talk about how that affects their experience in the United States, if you can.
I love that question. I love it. And that is something I'm doing now for the... for a group now. I'm writing something for them. When the Irish came, or when the missionaries came, the Igbo people were already practicing monotheism, as I said. And moreover, the culture is very, very close to the Jewish culture. among the peoples then, just like we have the Leviticus priesthood, you know, the Levites, among the Igbo tribe, they have a tribe. We have a group of people called the Nri, and these people would go to other places in Igbo tribe to minister to people talking about the one God. So they made the place already fertilized for Christianity and the one God. So when the Irish missionaries came, I mean, Christianity went like wildfire. And the biggest seminary in the world today, I believe, is Bigard's Memorial Seminary in Nigeria, which is in Igbo land. And in that little, in that city, there are two major seminaries in that one city, actually. Wow. Two major seminaries in that one city, because I went to one of them. And then many other seminaries, you know, from that Igbo land. So you may not be surprised to discover that most of the Nigerian priests, you know, are from that particular tribe.
Okay.
And that's because, you know, their culture already, which is more of a Jewish culture, with that, you know, they could understand the Christianity and the emergence of Christianity from the Old Testament and everything. So with that, they embraced Catholicism really great.
Okay.
Then many seminaries and many priests and stuff like that.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Well, so, Bobby's on screen, so he has to ask a question now.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize I was muted. I guess
Bobby.
That was a very good phrase. You might want to patent that phrase you used earlier, Father, that when America sneezes, the world catches the virus. Because when you said that, priests are human too, right? They're supernatural men, but they're not supermen, if that makes sense, right? You have holy orders, but that doesn't, the indelible mark of holy orders doesn't erase your humanity, right? When I say you're, I mean any priest, you're right?
Correct. Very, very correct.
So with that in mind, Father, I guess what concerns me, because I've seen this happen firsthand, but I'd be curious to get your take on this. When priests leave the dire situations of Nigeria, the poverty, the threats of war and terrorism, just all the bad things going on in certain parts of Africa, and they come here to this first world country, to the United States, and the ease and the comfort and the abundance and all the cultural rot, do you see priests that catch that American virus, and how do they protect themselves from that? Because it's a big change going from a third world country to a country like United States, even if their motives are pure in the beginning. You know, like Paul said, what began in the spirit ended in the flesh, and First Thessalonians. So how does that work from what you've seen?
Well, from what I have seen, from what I have read, and again, I'll be attending a conference in Houston this June. No doubt that America is a great country. And there is no doubt that, you know, people like to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Let us not forget, too, that home is home. Home is home. If you have a friend who is a bishop. Many bishops in the United States right now are making it mandatory for the international priest to incarnate after either 6 years or 8 years or 10 years. So they will know what to do, because many of them really do not want to incarnate because they want to go home too after a while.
Interesting.
Oh, yes. In my diocese here, I mean, I know what I'm talking about. I mean, I belong to the Presbyterian National Board. I've served in the College of Consultants. I belong to the Presbyterian Council. I mean, name them. And we struggle with those issues. And we got tired of priests, you know. We just give us an information, you know. I'll be living in the next 2 years. I'll be living in the next. The bishop and the Presbyterian Board had to sit down. Now I said, hey, man, we need to do something about that. The bishop and his College of Consultants, I'm sorry. We need to do something about that. And then priests were asked to either incarnate or, you know, kind of, you know, resign their whatever they are being here for maybe 3 years or something like that, you know, and it's a big deal for some of them. While some did it, some have not done it up to now. Honestly speaking, some have not done it up to now. And what I'm saying is, I'm saying it as a member who is in the castle. That happens often. But then I can remember in the year 2006, the NFPC, National Federation of Priestly Council, which I was a member at the time for 6 years, they gave grants to Dr. Hodge and Dr. Okure. They were professors at KUA. To study, you know, the priest shortage in the United States and other things. And I'm picking just one thing. And one of the things they pointed out, which they were not happy with, is that many of the lay people think that these people come here because of the good life here. In other words, it's like they are gold diggers, and they were asking.
You said it, not me. That's what I was thinking, though.
I'm talking about a research, a book, okay?
Yeah.
They were saying, they were asking, does it mean that when the Westerners go to other places, they become missionaries? And when those other people come to the West, they become gold diggers. And is that the way the church is? And then just last year, 2003, the U.S. bishops have been heavy in talking about intercultural competence, okay? To encourage the American laity to also develop this intercultural competence and accept these people, see them as missionaries, and work with them and not see them as other things. Because one of the, issues they have is, number one, many of them do not have access to the kind of theology you guys have. And so they do not know about the priest shortage in the United States. And they still believe that America should be a sending country and not a receiving country. And of course, they also believe that made in America, even human beings, are the best. So we want our own people. But then if you follow that, guess what's going to happen? Many churches will be closed, just like many have been closed already. And the American bishops are really working hard now to change people's mind, okay, from thinking like that. Yes, that is really, I believe that is good, because these are insiders. They know what is going on. They have seen priests come and go, you know, they do not want to keep losing. But at the same time, that does not exclude the fact that myself here, that I can enter my car by 12 midnight and drive to Dallas to see my mom without having any problem, which I would never do in Nigeria. I'd probably be killed somewhere. And I enjoy it, or that, you know, I wake up anytime, I put on the light will come on, which probably in Nigeria, I could stay 1 month, no light, no electricity. I mean, so I'm not denying that, all right? But then we also need to know that vocation is not just based on that alone. Neither was the missionary work of Christ based on that too. I can tell you, it hurts when you stay in a place for years and you're not able to see your siblings. You know, it's not really a very happy thing too. You know what I mean? So all those things put together. So it goes two ways. It goes both ways. You know, the greatness of America. Do I enjoy it? Of course, yes. I will never deny it. will I accept that's the reason I came here, just to enjoy that? I'll say no. And I, as an individual, I have an evidence of that. And that evidence is, I already studied in the United States University. I didn't even decide to go to the seminary here in the United States, talk less of living here. I went back to Nigeria. and then I went into the seminary in Nigeria. Not even knowing in that I might be here again.
And Father, you said you went to Duquesne, correct?
Yes. I went to Duquesne University, Pittsburgh.
What was your degree?
Philosophy.
Oh, very good. What was that like? What led you over to, maybe I missed it the first time, but what led you here initially to go to Duquesne?
Okay. I was having problems with my parents. I wanted to be a priest. They did not want me to be a priest. I called a priest by the name Father Bennett, passed away now. And he was like, you know, philosophy will be one of your best degrees to get. And at the same time, I joined the Holy Ghost Fathers. And then luckily for me too, you know, you must have a philosophy degree. Very good. So I went to their college to do philosophy. And that was a time when the Holy Ghost Fathers were trying to get their college affiliated to Duquesne University. And then Duquesne University, at the time, wanted to know the capability of students they have. And so every now and then, they will ask for two students, three students. And of course, because these guys wanted to get that accreditation or whatever, you know, they tried to, I do not claim to be smart, please, but you know, they try to send those who will go and do well. So, and one day I was called and told, hey, get your passport. You'll be going to Duquesne University. I said, okay. So I got my passport. Then I saw myself at Duquesne University 2 weeks after school started.
A little late.
Yeah. But I still made it, finished, and then I went back home.
Yeah, Father had a question about the challenges, the major challenges that you help priests with, because you had a wonderful training book that you've been working on. You do speeches, you help priests integrate into their ministry here. Besides the accents, some priests have heavier accents than others. Besides that challenge, what are some other challenges that you help priests from Nigeria with integrate well into the ministry here?
Oh, my brother. And guess what? Every day I'm seeing more and more. Recently, my bishop and the vicar general asked me to design a document for orienting international priests that come to the diocese. So, and that led me into another research work now. And hopefully after they take whatever they're taking, I will also publish there. So I came to see many, many things, honestly. Things like, apart from accent, people who see themselves in a situation of confusion, not knowing what to do because this is a total different culture. Yeah. They have left their culture, they know, and they're not able to get into the new culture. And I can tell you, some of them even get some kind of complexities and stuff like that. Even things we may not regard as important, things like food, you know? Because I remember back home in Nigeria, United States, the best country in the world, they will have the best food. But, you know, the food you grew up with becomes the food you grew up with. And when you come to the United States, it's totally different. I know many priests from Nigeria who, up till today, they may have stayed here for 15 years, they do not eat American food. They go to African stores and look for the African spices and stuff like that to prepare their own food. And then apart from that too, there are other things like weather. Like where I come from, it's warm, it's hot. And then you begin to wonder, man, how am I going to work here when it is 10 degrees? Those are things from them. And then, of course, I like to use the word microaggression. Some have come here and we are sent home within a short time because of lack of appropriate preparation. And so they come trying to bring in the culture they know, not knowing that, hey, we are in a different culture, and that culture you know could get you into trouble.
Yeah. There's a story here in the town I live in Bonn, Germany. There's a church I can see right out my window. Small church. It's called a Black Catholic church because it's like a really conservative church here. And they had a priest come here. I don't know from what country in Africa, but it made the news because they didn't want him here at all. They kind of ran him off, right? That doesn't really happen in the United States, though, right?
You know, one thing I must tell you is it does happen, but it is worse elsewhere than United States. The United States has a great constitution, so some people may have that in mind, but in respect of the law, in respect of the Constitution, they may not do it. But do we experience that? The answer is Yes. Yeah. On the other hand, though, American freedom extends to all kind of things. If you are in a parish and you are serving the people very well, sometimes they do not, they no longer think of where you come from.
Yeah.
They no longer think of where you come from. Because all they know is you are doing a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in a parish at a time, St. Joseph's Parish, Krebs, Oklahoma. Keep it precise. Just there doing my work, doing my best, everything and stuff like that, you know. For me, I'm just doing my work. And guess what happened? I began to notice something different. I was wondering what's going on. I go to the office. The secretary would shut down the computer, drop the telephone. I was wondering what is going on. Eventually, long story short, I discovered what was going on. They helped get visas for my mom and dad, bought a ticket here in the United States, mailed the ticket to Nigeria, and brought them to my parish as my Christmas present, because I was always talking of my parents. Mm-hmm. You see that you may not see that in every place, but one of those great things about United States. I mean, United States being a free country, United States being a melting pot. I mean, it's still there. I mean, it still has her own problems and stuff like that. But we should not let that destroy other good aspects of the United States.
Yeah.
So how do the seminaries over in Nigeria or certain parts of Africa differ from the seminaries here in the U.S.? I guess on two levels. Firstly, on the, do they lean more traditional, or are they more in sync with Vatican II and post Vatican II? And also just the issue of, I don't know any other way to say it, but like the issue of homosexuality in Nigerian seminaries or African seminaries compared to here in America. Can you shed a little light on those differences of those two areas?
I sure will. And if you don't mind, I would like to close my office before I go on with that.
Please.
I got parish council tonight and they're beginning to come, and I don't want them to.
Make sure the room is clear. Make sure you sweep for bugs.
It's gotta be a good question when our guest has to get out of his seat to close a door, huh?
Yeah.
Right? So I want to be honest without scandalizing anybody.
It's not scandal if it's the truth.
Especially my parishioners. So what I'll say here is this. Number one, a parish in United States, in Nigeria, is more traditional than the church in Nigeria is more traditional than the church here. I'll say that. And in Nigeria, if you leave the seminary, sorry, you've left. But here in the United States, I know some guys who left and come back after 4 years, come back after 3 years. No problem. Probably because of the need for priests. You see that? In Nigeria, no, I never saw that in my own time. If it has started since I left Nigeria, I don't know. And as I said, well, very traditional, very, very traditional, such that if you go by, I don't know, was it 4 months ago or something like that, the Nigerian bishops wrote a letter to Pope Francis, you know, about certain things they think he is liberal. He's becoming liberal in the church. Yeah. You know, I'm aware of that. I just don't want to go into detail. I'm not a bishop, but I do not want to get into the deal. I'm thinking of your next question. What was the question now?
Regarding the rampant homosexuality in seminaries.
Oh.
Compared to in America.
Now, remember what I said before about the place you have.
Did we lose Father?
Bobby, you got him talking about the issues, the controversial issues, and then they cut him off.
Sexuality.
Oh, hey, Father, you. We apologize. We lost you for about 30 seconds, pretty much right when you started to answer the question.
Oh, yeah. The lights went off and came back.
That's okay.
Just like Nigeria.
The rule of Oklahoma. So what I'm saying is, okay, long story short is that traditionally it was already a taboo, whether you are in the seminary or not.
Mm-hmm.
It was already, okay. Now, that does not mean that you or I or anybody has a microscope to what happens in every room. That I would surely say that some of the seminaries, the seminaries here, there might be things like that, you know, happen, but seriously.
Yeah, it was cutting in and out a lot too. Looks like we.
Yeah, he might have when the lights went out. I wonder if the Wi-Fi went out too. But that was interesting though. What are you saying? That it's the culture itself. I mean, homosexuality is a taboo. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised when it gets into the seminary that is taboo there as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wanted him to distinguish too, and I should have because, you know, there's the phrase more traditional. I believe there's a difference between traditional and traditionalist.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious what that distinction is. And I would imagine, Dave, based on past shows you've done, that it probably is traditional, not traditionalist, because that part of the world has kind of rejected the, like you said, they've rejected the liturgy wars, the Latin liturgy wars, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of baked into the culture over there as it used to be baked into, you know, I guess more traditional Protestant and Catholic Christianity, you know, circa whatever. Everyone talks about the 1950s, right? Oh, Father's back.
Yeah. I don't know how it stopped. I don't know. Okay. So, yes, I would say, yes, I cannot really say there. All those guys there are angels, they are perfect and stuff like that. Even though somebody may not be caught or something like that, but every now and then you hear rumors, okay? Mm-hmm. You hear rumors. Mm-hmm. But then something that was already a taboo in the society. Now, if whatever is a rumor, you know, is discovered as real, that person is done immediately. Now, but that does not mean that you and I know everything that happened in secret.
Yeah.
Am I making sense there?
Mm-hmm.
And Father, what about, you know, a lot of Nigerian priests or priests from a lot of countries that they will come into the United States and they'll engage in something, they'll witness something that they may be foreign to them. You know, we call it here on our podcast and other places, we call the liturgy wars, where there's a segment of Catholics in the United States that truly believe that the church would be better off if we went back to 1962 and just used that missile, or even an older missile, that the church would be better off. We'd make more saints. And it'd be a better church altogether if we go back to the old traditions. I always thought that was a foreign concept for Nigerians, because Nigeria is a diocese, a country where you're actually making martyrs. I mean, people show up to church knowing that they could be their last mass, that they could die that day, right?
Yeah.
And you're producing seminarian after seminarian. You're exporting them. You're sending them out as missionaries. Yet the country is largely Novus Ordo. And so it seems to be a church that seems, okay, this liturgy is working for us. Maybe that's cultural. But how does that work with you when you come to this country and you're in Tulsa, so you're familiar with traditional Latin mass. So, but how does that work with Novus Ordo priests from Nigeria come to this country and hearing about we have to go back to 1962?
Very good. Very good. Very good. I would say that is that really too much of a big deal? And I tell you why. When I was ordained in Nigeria, the last course we take is practicum. And in that practicum, everything you do, the mass, the exultate, all of them, you will do it practically, you know, in English, in Latin, and in Igbo language. But all of them are done in the Novus Ordo. Nigeria is a place where the Vatican has said, they believe there. So now, because they are already have that sense of Latin, like here in the diocese, there is no priest, because all of them are from the Igbo, we are about 15, 17 or something like that. All of them can celebrate Mass in Latin, except that they will do it in the form of the Novus Ordo, because we did not learn it in the way of the traditional Latin Mass.
Oh yeah, that's just the same here in our diocese military service. We have two Igbo priests here at our parish, and they offered Latin Mass in Novus Ordo every first Sunday. Yeah. And they're really good at the Latin. Well, yeah.
Yes, so that is why, you know. So that's why they're able to tolerate that, because they used to learning Latin, in the seminary we are encouraged to take a diploma exam in Latin. I have a diploma in Latin. Of course, you got to learn the rest of the Greek, you know, all those. Yes, that kind of helps them. However, because the Vatican goes for Novus Ordo, they prefer the Novus Ordo.
Okay.
They wouldn't like that traditional Latin Mass, I would say. And they remember, I never read this any place. This is my private thought. Am I making a sense here?
Absolutely.
So absolutely. It's not like quoting anybody or I saw the writing issued out, or a document issued out by the Nigerian Conference of Catholic Bishops. No. But I'm just saying, I'm just talking from my observation.
Yeah.
Am I missing one other question?
That was all my questions, actually.
All right.
So, Father, what are some of the other areas of cultural conflict that Nigerian priests encounter when they come, especially to the United States? I'm sure it's different for other countries. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of similarities between the different Western countries that they go to, but particularly in the United States, based on your experience, because you've been here you know, so long. You mentioned the food before. I thought the food was quite interesting. I have an Indian friend who is an immigrant. He came over here. He's been here, I want to say about 10 years. When he first got here, he didn't know there was such a thing as bad food, you know, because in India, you kind of took what you got and it was all just, you know, whatever came to you. Here, everything was so cheap and there was all this cheap food, fast food. You can go into the 7-Eleven or wherever it is and it's so cheap and it tastes really good. And then he started to gain a bunch of weight. And so he had to kind of learn how to eat as a healthy American. He never had that problem in India. So you mentioned the food. What are some of the other, you know, the biggest cultural conflicts?
I'll tell them, and I know we are running late in time, so I'll probably be fast in the way I mentioned them. Communication. And by the way, I need to say that communication is not only about accent. Communication also includes body language. There are certain sign language, or rather certain signs, that may be the same but mean something different than what it means in Nigeria. So I just wanted to add that one. And then apart from that, too, and then we do have, we wish the Americans will also embrace the cultural competence, knowing that the church is both a sending church and a receiving church. And the universality of the church comes first. It's more important so that dioceses who have could lend to dioceses who do not have. And with that, they will also, find a way to cooperate with these priests. While at the same time, the priests will also know that they are in a culture that is different. They are no longer in a culture where women are not regarded. And so we don't have a woman in the staff. They need to understand that here in the United States, women are educated. Some women even have degrees in theology. And they need to make a good use of them in their parishes, I would say. That is also very, very important. They need to know that. And they also need to know that here in the United States, leadership is more of a collaborative leadership. And so it's not like I'm the pastor. It's got to be this way, that way, or this way. All right? There is a collaboration. And in that collaboration, okay, that includes the youth, the women, you know, the priest, all of them have a meeting, work together, figure out what is good for the parish, because they are the ones who know more about their parish. A priest come and goes, the parishioners stays, and they have been there for a long time. And so often they'll be the one to give the priest a better advice on how to, on how to do things in a parish, except if the priest thinks that, okay, these guys may have been influenced a lot by the Baptists in their home. Then he could come in and said, you know what, guys, the canon law says this. The encyclical of Pope Benedict says this. The encyclical of Pope Francis says this. You know what I mean? So they need to think of that. And then they need to know that certain things, you know, I still prefer to use the word microaggression happens everywhere in the world, in Nigeria, okay? a person from the North cannot relate exactly with a person from the East the same way another person from the East will relate with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So here, though, it might be a little bit different, but yes, we also need to know that we represent the teachings of the Prince of Peace. And even if we experience those issues, we need to know that the wish of Christ comes first, but at the same time, looking for a great opportunity to talk to that person privately and tell the person what you did is wrong, but not to do it in a way that might cause a scandal, you know, reacting in an activist way and stuff like that. That ain't gonna help the church, I would say. Then another stuff there is culture shock, you know, culture shock, you know. Yes, some of them really do have a culture shock, and if they have somebody in the diocese, you know, they need to be told the different signs of culture shock and how to handle it, you know. Do you need to talk to other people from your country who are here already and probably experienced it? How did they handle it and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Do you need to, and then again, you know, see yourself as a priest of the church and not a priest of the Igbo land, not a priest of Nigeria. And so do what Christ and the apostles did, you know, reaching out to the people despite the obstacles, despite the problems, put them behind. It is part of the discipleship, and move on and find better ways, you know, draw strategic plans to put those things behind, and then continue the work that Christ has called us to do. Then another great thing I thought is very, very important is the idea of how can I say it? I'm looking for the appropriate word for it. The idea of a priest is not a king. A priest is a servant. Mm-hmm. They know that. We all know that. But remember that we come from a culture where we have kings. So we grew up that way. And somehow it enters into the priesthood, and the priest sees himself as, you know, one of those kings who will be there dishing orders. It's got to be done this way or that way, without working with parishioners and stuff like that.
That's clericalism.
Yes, you know. But on the other hand, though, it's good I mentioned this. These things are not one-sided. Remember, certain reactions are caused by the first action. So the way some of them are received and treated make them do certain things they do. And that is why I'm happy that last year and this year, the USCCB is working hard on making sure that everyone, both the Americans, understand that cultural competence is for everyone. For us to know that the church, you know, we could learn a lot from the dogma of the Blessed Trinity, two persons in one God, with one, you know, loving the other, reaching out to the other, and stuff like that. Or the Pentecost event. I mean, next Sunday is Pentecost. The Pentecost event, these guys, they were Galileans, and but people from Apatia, Mesopotamia, and all those places were understanding them, or the early church, and they were all doing things, living together and stuff like that, without saying, you this, you that, I'm from there, you from there, and stuff like that, you know. And that idea of, you know, made in America is the best. So we don't need this guy. Because, hey, I can tell you this. Nobody becomes a priest without a minimum of 8 years education in college. So these guys may not see things, but they see it and they know it. They might, people, operationals might say, you know what, well, we find it hard to work with him because we could not understand the accent. But guess what? The same person is the person who somebody could call the rectory seeking for a help to pay his or her utilities. A pastor on the telephone for 1 hour and hey, what are you saying? So with that, yeah, we know what is going on. So that is that, and there are so many other things there, you know, that there are so many other things, but it's very important that the priest remembers that he is the leader. Mm-hmm. He is the altar Christus. He is the one who must teach others forgiveness by practicing it, letting go. And a place like America, United States, where I live right now, they are really good in seeing things. And when they see that, before you know it, all these other things will disappear, especially among the majority.
Amen. Father Leo Ahanutu, thank you so much for everything you're doing for Christ and his church and for the ministry that you have to help priests serve their mission well. We thank you for coming here and surviving the firing squad, and you did a wonderful job, and you educated us, and you broke down myths and barriers. And thank you.
Glad I survived.
You thrived.
Oh, I tried, huh?
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Father. We'll see you soon.
God bless you, Father.
Thank you, guys. And I've already joined, you know, your, what do you call it? I've subscribed into your program so that.
Oh, thank you.
I've been watching it and seeing it and stuff like that. And I'm wondering if there is any way I could get this discussion. If it could be emailed to me, if y'all...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll send this to you right after the show.
Yep.
Okay, good. And David, I'm telling you, every now and then I will get to you, like, after my bishop reads the assignment he asked me to do for the diocese.
Yeah.
After he's done with that, I might reach out to you, especially since you work with the... St. Dominic, I mean, you all have publications too, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would like for us to do an entire show with Father about these, you know, Black Catholics who put their skin color before their Catholic faith.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole nother show. We got to get out of here, Bobby.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. A whole separate show I'd like us to do on that.
That's something that I really would
about cultural Marxism.
I really would like that, because I've gotten myself into trouble by being against that. It's
not. Yeah. Like, that's a whole show.
We rather
like
should put Christ first.
Amen.
There's
all right, we got another show, Father Leo.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you.
See you, brother.
Thank you.
All right.